Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had the sheep.
Well, he had a heating up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be all right.
Welcome along. It's another edition of the Football Family, a bonus edition of the Football Family here on the 42 with me, Gavin Cooney. David Sned is here. Morning, David.
Morning. What's the crack?
Shane Keegan is here as well. How are you, Shane?
Gentlemen, how are we getting on?
We're going to look ahead to the Scotland game later on in the show, but first, the time has come to look back. Over Ukraine 1, Republic of Ireland 0. It was a defeat to Ukraine's second team. It's a defeat that means Ireland are 2 defeats from 2 in this Nations League group. And incredibly, haven't won any of their 12 Nations League games across 3 campaigns. Games in which they've scored the sum total of 2 goals. Only San Marino have managed fewer goals in those games. Ireland have now won 4 of 24 games under Stephen Kenny. They haven't won a competitive game at home since June 2019, which is more than 1,000 days ago. David... where have all the good vibes gone?
I don't know, but I know I'm going to be getting them when I go to the Neil Diamond Music in Boston in July, which I'm absolutely buzzing about. It's where most great Irish football stories tend to happen in the summer is in Boston, isn't it? It's in some tour of America. So, yeah, that's where, my good vibes are going to be coming from very soon.
Neil Diamond reference. Tick. How is this, like Shane, how is this going so badly wrong so quickly?
Can we not just get the Army Post Armenia pod back up and get Brano to dub the word Ukraine over the word Armenia every time through that podcast and then re-release that podcast? No, because we're going to struggle here to say a whole pile different than what we said first time round.
Because I think the Ireland's actual play and what we spoke about after the Armenia game, and in fact it was John Egan. Ireland's play peaked in the 9th minute when John Egan played a lovely outside of the boot pass that split open the Ukraine midfield. Jason Knight got it on the half turn and shot. And then after that, I don't think Ireland actually, other than maybe that one pass through from Hendrick for Robinson, which could have led to a penalty. Other than that, what we spoke about before Armenia, where passes forward, quick, sharp, actually caused any kind of penetration, just never materialised.
Because I know you talk about Shane that we could just repeat the Armenia thing, but you know, like at least the Armenia thing was part of a trend in Ireland struggling against low-lying teams. Coming into that game, I thought, well, this might be different because Ukraine will give us a bit of space behind, and they did, and we still struggled.
Yeah, I know. I'm half joking, so I am. But I suppose, look, I've 2 angles to come at it from this morning, right? The first angle I would come at it from is the one that will definitely make people shout at their phones while they're listening to me saying this, which is, it's not as bad as it looked, okay? It's absolutely not as bad as it looked, right? And again, because I am perfectly happy to hold my hand up and completely admit to being biased, A, because I like Stephen, B, because I need League of Ireland manager to do well as an international manager so that it furthers the chances of League of Ireland managers having further opportunities. So instead of giving my opinion, I'm trying as much as I can to look at the numbers, because the numbers aren't my opinion, they're fact in theory. So the XG, again, from the game was Ireland 1.86, Ukraine 0.8, okay? So, again, in a normal game of football, that means that we win that game 2-1.
But this keeps happening, like. I mean, we were winning on the XG against Armenia as well, but we keep losing. I mean, at what point does it... Like, okay, isolated, it's an aberration. But it's a trend, like.
Did you see last night? I thought it was very interesting. But on that, so the reason why Ukraine scored, Damien Delaney's analysis of the goal and the defending for it was just top class. I think it's like about a minute. It's a minute and 20 seconds. But from his point of view, he literally breaks down the 3 factors that led to the goal, which is basically Hendrick, who was in a hole, getting dragged off by a runner, leaving space. Enda Stevens, who should be zone American, then goes with a man. And then he ends up causing an issue. And then Shane Duffy then tries to overcover maybe, or do something to try and then you actually see Duffy balling the head out of Hendrick afterwards, because he sees at the very start that Hendrick had gone with a runner rather than staying in the space. And if he had dropped, could have cleared that. So Damien Delaney, it's worth, I retweeted it yesterday, but it's on, I think Virgin tweeted it. But that just, but what I'm saying is, in terms of why are these things happening, it's because goals are coming from scenarios where Ireland aren't defending well enough.
Yeah, I agree. And I did see that breakdown. It was very, very good. The only thing I'd say is there were occasions where Ukraine didn't defend brilliantly but got away with it. Like, Gav, you were saying it's a trend. It's only two games. Like, it is still only two games. We were going quite well up until recently. It is only two games. I mean, my God, if you look at the Premier League last season, I think... what's his name? Graham Potter at Brighton. I mean, they're just... It's incredible how much they managed to underachieve based on under XG nearly all season long. So it is. So you can get little spells of it where it happens. I suppose I'm just trying to make the point that we are assessing everything based on the fact that we have lost these two games in a row. Normally, we wouldn't have lost either of those two games. Normally, we would have come away from those two games based on the numbers with quite possibly a win and a draw. Okay, we haven't, and we do have to deal in reality instead of in XG. But as I say, it's just to try and paint a realistic picture that it's not two games in which we were firmly second best in both games and got what we deserved. We've lost both games, but the numbers on both games do show that we should have got something out of both. And that's why I just bring a little bit of perspective to it from that point of view, right? Now, all that said, now let's look at why we were... poor, because we were poor again. Like, you look at the shape of the two teams, okay, and in theory both teams were playing a 3-4-3 with a box four in midfield, okay? So that gives a brilliant opportunity to compare the two sides and what the two sides were doing well as against what they weren't.
And sorry, a box four in midfield are two guys who are sitting in front of the defence and then two guys who are playing in front of them, almost like... two number 10s, say.
Yeah, exactly. Two guys sitting, and then the two guys sitting tend to be fairly similar in most systems. The two guys in front of that, they're the ones that are always very interesting in terms of what are they being told to do. Are they being told to play deep and central, high and central? You know, are they given a bit more freedom to go out wide? Where they go? And that, essentially, to me, is actually probably brings us to the biggest area of improvement or what we can most learn from Ukraine in this game. So... I know, Gav, I know you saw the Dan McDonald pick. Did you see Dan's pick, David, from up in the stand?
Yeah.
So it's just a moment in time. It's just one freeze frame, all right? And it can only tell you so much based on one picture. But it led me, I suppose, to go looking after certain numbers. Basically, it highlighted how disjointed our box four was, or how what's the word, not even disjointed, how far the two at the front of that box four seem to be playing away from how close the two at the base of that box four are. And again, Gav, I don't know if it's the kind of thing we can get out through social media or something like that, but the actual, you know, the Y Scout map that shows the every player's position based on their average touch. So if you have a look at that, it basically highlights Dan McDonald's picture even more, in that our two players, Ogbene and Knight, were playing like way, 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 distance-wise, way, way, way away from Hendrick and Cullen, whereas with Ukraine's, their two were playing extremely close towards their two sitting midfielders, if that makes sense.
That would make it, in theory, much easier for them to control possession, because they're closer to each other, so it's easier to find the pass, and much more difficult to play through, just because there's more bodies around the Irishman in possession.
Exactly. Both, one, it makes it a hell of a lot easier for them to find each other and play, make combinations and all of that kind of stuff, and two, if or when it breaks down, they've still got four players extremely central who are able to revert back into a defensive shape very, very quickly. Whereas, obviously, if our two are gone higher, they're basically out of the equation. Anytime play breaks down, or it's very, very hard for them to get back into a decent defensive position.
In your, do you believe that Kenny is asking the Irish team to set up like that, with those big gaps between the front two and the sitting two, or is that the player is just not following the plan? Does Kenny want the team set up like the Ukraine midfield was set up?
I think some of it will be down to instruction, and some of it will be down to the the natural traits of the players he picks in those two 10 positions. So if you look at the two that started the last day, Agbene and Parrott, they're obviously going to gravitate towards the centre forward rather than gravitate towards the centre midfield. In theory, Knight should have balanced that out a little bit this time round, in that you would have thought he would have gravitated towards the two centre midfielders a little bit more, but the numbers and the touch maps show that he didn't really, to be honest with you. He played very high, wide. Obviously, he had some very good periods in the game. So I would think he was directed to try and play more as an attacker than as a midfielder, because I think his natural game would have seen him come towards the play a little bit more. But just to really, really hammer it home with the numbers, right? It led me just to go into, there's one of the Y Scout boxes, and sorry for people who aren't into numbers now, but there's one of the Y Scout pages that gives what's called a passing matrix. How many times every player on the pitch passed to any other player on the pitch, okay? So our two, Hendrick and Cullen, and then we look at the two ahead of that, which were Robinson and Agbene, up to the point where Robinson was taken off. So Josh Cullen passes to Agbene in the game, 2. Josh Cullen passes to Robinson in the game, 0. Hendrick, 0. Hendrick passes to Agbene in the game, 2. Hendrick passes to Robinson in the game, 2. So we had a grand total of 6 passes that were made from any two of our sitting midfielders to any two of our supposed attacking midfielders. Okay, Ukraine's players, I'm not even going to try their names.
How can that system, sorry, Isha, how can that system then even work if that's
yes. It didn't.
No, that's but what I'm saying is, but even with that, but even generally then, like that's
Yeah. 100%. And with the Ukraine boys, I'm just going to refer to them by numbers, Gav, more so it's easier for me. So 10 and 5 were their two sitting midfielders. They started with 14 and 20 as their two 10s. Interestingly, 20 played quite high and got replaced by 15 at half time, who played deeper, which made it even more of a very tight box 4, if that makes sense. And their passing combinations, 10 to 14, 7 times. 10 to either 20 or 15, because they chopped and changed at halftime 5 times, and then 5 to 14 5 times, and 5 to either 20 or 15 9 times. So total combinations for Ireland 6, total combinations for Ukraine 26. So
that's the difference. That's why they look a lot more dangerous on the ball, is because of that difference in stats.
Well, I think that's huge. I think that the fact that Callum, I couldn't believe Josh Cullen or Josh Cullen didn't pass to Callum Robinson the whole game, and that's kind of what led me down that wormhole. And it does show a huge. And then there's loads of spin-off numbers that you can look at based on that kind of thing. I mean, you look at passes into the penalty box. Like you look at for a start, they played 90 passes, more than us. Passes into the box. We attempted to pass into the box on 20 occasions. Now, this excludes crosses. We attempted to pass into the box on 20 occasions. They only attempted to pass into the box on 11 occasions. Yet they had more successful passes into the box than us. They were successful 6 out of 11 times. We were only successful 5 out of our 20. And again, I know we spoke about the deep completions the last day. We finished the entire game with 3 deep completions. They had 6. And then there's another one. It's another one that you nearly have to go... You nearly have to go with your definition first, but I know it's the thing that a lot of people are talking about. They're talking about our play being too slow. And believe it or not, Y Scout have a metric for that as well. They call it match tempo, which is basically number of passes per minute of possession. So try and digest that, number of passes per minute of possession. And look, it might seem little enough difference, but we averaged 15 passes per minute of possession. They averaged 17. That might seem small enough, but you multiply that out over a 90-minute game. And it's, you know, again, it's quite a difference. And it does just highlight that we are slower to move the ball than the opposition, you know.
And then even when you tie that in, but then it's strange when you tie that in then with Stephen Kenny talking about being disappointed that they ended up going long too much. That could have even then have been greater in terms of those passes if maybe Ireland hadn't done that. Do you know what I mean? If it could have even, and even like all those numbers on this, and like I know I scoff at it, but I kind of slag some of the numbers. But that's only, I'll be honest, part of that is just my own not understanding properly what all goes into. That's the truth of it, right? But But that just feeds into it. People would be coming away from that game and saying, well, why was it shit? Why was it crap? That all feeds into that. That's the reason. That's the numbers deal are in behind it. Because all when you add it all up, that's the reason why Ireland played so poorly. Like, do you know what I mean? We're saying there about being slow. And I know it's easy to say. And like I said about, you know, maybe fellas stopped showing for the ball or the certain passes weren't done. Yeah, that could be a broader kind of reason for it, but then when you look at that and how you've broken it down there, like that's concerning. Like, especially for at this stage of development of a team, that shouldn't be the case. Do you know what I mean? And it's getting to the stage where you're kind of just thinking. I do believe from what we're saying. Like, was that Stan? Remember you mentioned your man's account before? Is it Kieran, the fella on Twitter? Is very good. And like I saw him tweeting yesterday that of the 17 games and the defeats that Ireland have had, they've all been by one goal. Like, I still don't know. I don't know what does that tell us, though? Does that tell us that Ireland have been unlucky, or that, you know what, just one goal is all it takes to beat Ireland because that's how bad we are? That's all it takes. I don't know if that's a sign of, like what we're saying, oh, well, it's not that bad. But then almost it's like, well, all it needs is one goal to beat Ireland. That's all you need. Do you know what I mean? That's the scary thing for it a little bit. And even not a point of, oh, well, we haven't got the players, but you kind of do get the sense of, well, do you know what? If we want to change how Ireland are playing a little bit and maintaining some of the characteristics, you just have to change the players. Like, maybe there's some players who are just too, I don't know, entrenched in old habits. It's just those numbers and how you explain it there are quite telling for the team that should be doing a lot better than that.
We definitely have to look at either the personnel who are playing in those two tens positions, or the instruction that's been given to them, or what we're doing on the training ground with them. I mean, if you look at personnel wise, to be fair, like we spoke before about one man that's maybe been unlucky to miss out considering how well he was doing, like Jamie McGrath had it absolutely nailed in terms of when to come towards those two players and be a player who contributes in the build-up play to get us out and over the halfway line and into attacking positions, but then also not be too deep when it went into the final third. He always got back up to where he needed to be and was some presented himself as somewhat of a goal threat once we were in the final third. So I would have thought, like, Knight did have a good game, but as I say...
He faded, though. He faded as well. Like, he had a good first half, but other than that chance he had in this, right in injury time, he like the rest of them, like, there was nothing in the second half. You know what I mean? Again, Donald Duffy had that chance. But again, I know we spoke about this at the start about Knight. And again, it was said for reasons, because I think if that's the system, surely about McGrath, he'd be an ideal fella for in this, just because of his discipline as well and the flexibility within that.
Yeah, exactly. I do. I think he'd be, you know, he's definitely one to have to look at and see is there an opportunity to bring him back into the fold. I know he needs to be playing minutes. I don't know what he's going to do on that side of things, you know.
I'm probably coming across road here, but like, even that I say about minutes, there's other lads there who aren't getting minutes at all, who are still in. Do you know what I mean? And still playing. You can understand them more if this was a more general thing, but like, there's other lads there in big positions in the pitch who are still starting games.
Duffy and Hendrick, they're the main two.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Spine of your team.
Do you know what I mean? And like, for him not to even be in, not for him to be even in the squad, when you look at some of the issues we have in those positions, that's what's a bit strange. And listen, that's the manager's prerogative on it. But then when you see what you've been saying there, or listen to what you've been saying there about those numbers and just how clearly and evidently it's not working, that's when you've got a legitimate criticism to ask and say, well, hold on, what is it? Like, is he not in the squad because he's not playing when X, Y, and Z are? Or is there a different reason? And if there's a different reason, that's fair enough. But then when you have games like this and there's instances like this and prolonged patterns in a game where it's just not working, that's when there has to be other questions to be asked of it.
Shane, to go back briefly to the point you're making, those interesting stats about how our midfielders are not passing forward to the two number 10s in front of them. Why is that not happening? I mean, it's surely not a case of being told not to do it. So is this a case of the two number 10s hiding from the ball? Is it the fact that there's too much distance between them? Are the Cullen and Hendrick not good enough to play the ball? Is it something that the opposition were doing? I'm struggling to get my head around it.
Yep. And I'm gonna completely hold my hand up here now and point out one. I'm surprised neither of you pulled me up on it either. I'm after continuously saying how many times it went to Robinson and Benny. There is one. Sorry, we actually didn't mention the passes two nights. So the one passing lane. I'm looking here. Sorry, the one passing lane that was working was Cullen tonight. So I was, because I was thinking to myself, where have I gone wrong here, in that Knight did seem to have a good game. So the one passing lane that was working was Cullen tonight. That was there was nine passes played between the two of those. They're the only two in that box four that managed to contribute more than two passes to each other. So I think we need two. Now, the flip side is going to be how much of an attacking threat are we taking away, or how do we do it? But I think we need, you've got to have two players who are contributing that much in terms of the build-up play. Now, does that mean then that either Callum Robinson or Igbeneh has to get dropped? I know we're going to have a little bit of a look maybe to the starting lineup for the Scotland game anyway. Like Callum Robinson, I could not have praised Callum Robinson more last year. I thought he was outstanding and head and shoulders our best player. But there's a real concern around him at the moment. He's just not igniting at all. So he's not, and maybe a rest for him might be no harm at all. And yeah, try and go with another. Near a guy who's nearly more of a centre midfielder than he is an attacker. Maybe would you go with Knight and Alan Brown as your two tens? Would that give you a little bit more in terms of kind of energy and build up play and people who are looking to get on the ball in the deeper areas?
If you're looking for our energy and just, you know, people who aren't going to shy away from it, I'd love to see Malumbi. I don't know what he seems to have just kind of dropped down the pecking order a little bit. But even you mentioned there, like Alan Brown, possibly because he's done it already in terms of come off the bench and scored a couple of goals, he scored important goals, and maybe have that bit more of a threat that'll be in the manager's thinking. I did think it was a strange one that he came on and ended up playing on the right side when you have maybe Fessy Abazelli there as well, because Brown, when he came on, it was just get it, thrown back, go back inside. So well, personally, if you're talking about, especially a home game against Scotland, and they've got a decentish midfield as well. They've got good like Premier League standard players in there. I think someone like Jason Malumbi, who has a bit of a snarl about him and a bit of a bite about him, which I think that midfield is lacking. That's one issue. I think something like that could help just in terms of that early injection, and then hopefully. I think he will be capable of maintaining it because, and this is Shakara, he's been playing for West Brom. Like, he obviously would have had a rest, but he has been playing regularly in midfield for West Brom, which just helps massively.
Is there another issue with our set pieces? Because as David talked about there, Damien Delaney's analysis on the goal that Ireland conceded is another system collapse, like we saw in the home game against Belgium when they gave away such an easy goal off that corner. And Ireland aren't scoring off set pieces anymore. And to my kind of amateur eye, it just looks so predictable. They're always hitting Duffy, you know. It's just another symptom of how predictable Ireland have become. He's never really used a decoy. That, like, everything is aimed for Duffy's head, which you can understand because he's the best in the air. But at the same time, the opposition know that as well. Like, does there need to be a rethink there?
Yeah, and again, thinking back to Stephen's time in the league, Dundalk were actually fantastic for doing that. They were fantastic for doing that. Where they would set you up in such a manner that your focus was on Gartland or whatever, and it was Massey who popped up, you know, somebody that you saw as a lesser threat, it was Massey who popped up to get a goal, or your focus was on Andy Boyle and it was John Mountain who popped up to get the goal, or different things like that. I remember being, oh Jesus, teams I managed that we conceded a ridiculous amount of set pieces against Stephen's Dundalk teams, to be honest with you, and it was an area of the game that I always really, really thought he had nailed, or thought they had very, very well, were doing very, very well. You throw in the Anthony Barry situation, you know, is another kind of interesting part to this whole conversation maybe that we haven't discussed yet, and how much of a loss has he been? Look, as we know, he did I think he did his pro license thesis on set pieces and trying to maximize set pieces. We seem to do pretty well off a few of them while he was around. We're struggling a little bit again. Am I putting two and two together there and come up with five? Maybe a little bit, but...
Well, we got a ton of listener questions in for the show that I did want to read a few of them. And Graham and Jamie McGilloway make the same point that I'll quote Jamie's question. What impact has Anthony Barry had on the squad as it looks like we are a different team since he left?
Yeah, he's been a loss. We don't know unless you're inside the training camp. You don't know for definite. But just based on all we can look at, which is, you know, results, the eye test, numbers in my case a little bit, there's no doubt that things aren't looking as good, and he's the common denominator. And look, the players did, you know, it was very, very noticeable how often they brought his name up without you guys being the ones to bring their name. It wasn't like you were saying, what do you think of Anthony Barry, you know, the whole time. It was just that more so they were bringing his name up of their own accord. Is always a sign that somebody is extremely highly thought of, and I would imagine Gabby has to be a big loss around the place, yeah.
And even, like, he was so... Barry used to be... Maybe there's nothing to this, David, but Barry used to be so involved in the sideline. He'd always be out there barking instruction, whereas... You don't see that with John Eustace. And I don't know, I can't remember if you saw it much with Damien Duff before him either, in fairness.
Yeah, no, like, in terms of Anthony Barry, he was very well regarded within the South. Like, players really liked him. When they had the training camp in Spain and Chelsea won the Champions League, a lot of them obviously went out and watched it. And when he came back, they obviously celebrated with him, effectively. But... it was his appointment was strong and his impact was strong for a couple of reasons, and the fact that it played into the FAI's thinking that when Kenny got him and kind of got him from basically not out of nowhere, because obviously he's in the game, but the FAI wouldn't have been too aware of him, it kind of put Kenny's position when Kenny was coming under a bit of pressure, it kind of gave him a bit more solidity, because the FAI were thinking, well, this is a fellow whose judgment we know we can still trust on these matters too, and how he dealt with that and how he dealt with the appointment and getting him in, like, it benefited Kenny majorly. And then the players really responded to him, even just, I suppose, as a person, but even just how he operated on the training ground. And one thing that, from speaking to people, I remember I did a piece about that first year of, well, the first full year of Kenny Drain, from the disaster at Luxembourg, then how it finished, and obviously then beating them and things seemed to be going well. Just the manner of his instructions were very simple and just very well put across, and how he spoke to players. And Shane will know this, I suppose, as a coach. Like, and I suppose, I wouldn't, but just how he got that message across very simply without trying to overcomplicate it just went a long way with lads. And not patronising as well was one thing that was said. Like, it wasn't the fella coming in from Chelsea and saying, blah, 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 and this is how you do all, even though that's what he was doing in terms of, this is what we want you to do. It was just more so a case of how he spoke to lads and how he dealt with them was a big thing. And he was a very popular fella. Now, then you look at, we've spoken about, like, even Shane said at the start, well, maybe the numbers and all the rest of it in terms of with the XG since, and that we could have had 4 points in this game. That's the case when we're probably not having this conversation. It's just another element of it that we have to chat about, because at the moment when you lose your first two games in a campaign that you've set out to try and win, you have to analyse everything. You have to say, well, what's this? What's, like, you know what I mean? There's no other way. You can't overlook that. And I think it's one of the things that seems to be suggested by some people is that, oh, you know, that Stephen Kenny has gotten a free ride and all the rest, but when that hasn't been the case at all, do you know?
David, I know you wanted to chat a little bit about Jason Knight. You were chatting to him after the game.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. Just, well, first of all, I thought it was bad form that so three players were brought out to speak to the media after the game. Jason Knight had obviously spoke to RTE and stuff, but then by the time he came down to speak to other journalists, he'd already been up in the players' lounge speaking to family, and then he'd been, like, literally dragged back down like an hour later after a match. So kind of the fact that he was willing to do that, and then he's talking about putting demands on himself to kind of help or drag Ireland out of this is what he said, and that the younger players need to step up and be so fun. I was kind of thinking, like, he's not even got 13 caps. Like, Roy Keane spoke about how at international level, this is Roy Keane, obviously not feeling comfortable really, or even properly in tune with what the demands were for him, even up until he had 25, 30 caps. And then you're putting this, not that he's, the pressure's being put on him, but he feels that when a fella who's literally not even, he'll get his 13 cap, I'd imagine he'll start against Scotland, he's feeling those extra demands. Like, I don't know, it kind of made me think, I don't think that should be the case. I don't think a young lad who is still coming through in the game should be feeling that kind of demand. It's good that he maybe, that's what he puts on, and that's there, the demands he puts on himself, that could be good, but I just don't think that should be the case. I think there should be, that's where maybe other lads around them, and there are seeing, and this is the thing as well, it's not as if, like, even though there has been changes made to the squad and to the playing staff, it's not as if this is a, that was a team even against Ukraine who are together a wet week, or there's lads there who are already wet by years. There's still experienced players there who should be doing more, do you know what I mean? And that was, like, Noy said that as well. He said, listen, that the senior players have been great, and that there are some really good senior players in there, but that I did feel that was a slight worry, thinking that if a lad who has literally played 12 times for the senior team in Ireland is talking about him feeling a responsibility to drag Ireland out of a mess. Yeah, it's good that he has that mentality, but maybe not so good that he feels as if that's the expectation on him, if that makes sense.
Hmm.
I don't know.
Hmm.
I don't know, what do you think of that? Because, like, you cover the team, Gav. Like, what, like, I don't know if that's me just being a bit precious about it, or thinking, you know what, maybe it's not, but for a lad like that to be thinking like that, I think I kind of have mixed feelings about that, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Knight is often thrust into this role. Like, he came out and he's done press after really bad games as well, as far as I know. I think he might have spoke after Luxembourg at home. I have a feeling that he might have. Bazunu definitely did. I don't know. I mean, I think it's partly his character. Like, he's a very grown up 21-year-old, and he's been forced to grow up a lot in terms of his kind of dysfunctional club environment at Derby County. I took that more of an indication of just how the amount of pressure he puts on himself. But I read it and I thought, actually, that's not, God, like, that's a big burden for you to be carrying already in your career, you know? And I felt it was reflective of, okay, these two defeats are weighing very, very heavily on them. And I admired it, but I just wonder, in 6 or 7 years' time, when Jason Knight has 50 or 60 caps for Ireland, and if God help us if we're still having results like these, I think he might be talking more in the, you know, we have to dust ourselves off, we've come back before, we just have to stick to our game plan and, you know, we have to improve, but rather than, you know, hauling all of this burden on himself.
Because,
you know?
I think we have to as well, like, he's a good player and he's shown potential and he has obviously that character, but, like, he's still very, like, I'm trying, like, again, what Shane would think on this, I still think he still needs to be managed. And I think he has been managed well, because it's not as if Kenny's been playing him every single game and starting every single game. But, like, remember Jamie Carragher talking about this, about some young lads who's at the start of their career, they kind of born very brightly and then it can quickly fade. And I'm not saying I'm hoping that won't happen with Jason Knight. We kind of still need to kind of maintain a balance with him a little bit. Like, he's still got so far to go in terms of being the finished article. I think eventually he will be one of the main men for Ireland in terms of what that early potential has shown. But there's still so much more to come from him. He's by no means anywhere near the player I think he'll end up being.
Yeah, no, look, he is. Look, there's no doubt he was very impressive. I mean, the first 15 minutes were a real whirlwind for him the other day, because he was involved in our first two really good chances. And then, to be fair, he was also involved in their first two really good chances. He gave the ball away for their first decent chance. And then the second time round, it should definitely have been a free. Remember, he got shoved off the ball, and they broke on a bit of an attack that time as well. And he was everywhere. He was absolutely everywhere. He was the most noticeable player on the field, that's for sure. I mean, The one thing that, when you say players burning out too early, the one time when they will burn out too early is if they're playing a hell of a lot of games and constantly getting bet. that won't help matter. Wouldn't help matter. So it wouldn't. But I'd start him tomorrow 100%. I'd be starting him tomorrow mainly because I'm going to the game and I want him to be on the field because he brings a bit of excitement.
So we'll all do that again together tomorrow.
I think so.
Which one? I think you'd be Bills, and are you bringing the young lad?
I'm bringing three young lads. I have one adult ticket and three kid tickets, David.
So you're fucking...
My own lad plus two more.
You'll definitely fucking need a drink, so.
Knight was one of the few players in green who had a shot either off target or on target that wasn't Shane Duffy. And Joe McCarthy asks, should push Shane Duffy up front be Kenny's plan B after 2 years in charge? And if it is, what does that say about his suitability for senior international management? Shane.
Based on these numbers, Gav, push Shane Duffy up front should be plan A, never mind plan B. Mother of God. I mean, just.
But that's, I have to say, that's a bit of a damning indictment of the whole thing. If this is still, you know, whatever about set pieces, but this is from open play now, yeah. You know? Duffy's, the header onto the bar was from open play. That was unlucky. There was another, there was kind of an acrobatic volley which led Knight to blasting the ball over the bar from inside the box. That was open play. I don't know. We'd look more reliant on him than ever before.
Yeah, well, again, just to put it into context for people on the numbers side of it, why scout class any a goal scoring chance as any chance that has an XG of 0.2 or higher, right? So that means one in five times, their data tells them that one in five times that ball ends up in the back of the net. Ukraine did not have a chance in the game that registered 0.2 or higher. Not one did they have in the game that registered 0.2 or higher. Shane Duffy had three. Shane Duffy himself had three. He had 0.25, 0.22, 0.31. And was by far and away our biggest goal scoring threat. He totaled 0.94 as a goal threat, which is absolutely ridiculous for a centre back. And also, by the way, surprise, what Ireland player had the most penalty box touches?
Oh, surely not Shane Duffy.
Most penalty box touches, isn't that mentally?
Are you serious?
Duffy, yeah, yeah. Duffy touched the ball in the box more often than any of our forwards or midfielders.
Shane Duffy touched the ball in the penalty box five times. The next highest was, I'm just scrolling here, but I think it was four. Jason Knight with four.
And do you know what? It would have been six, but he had a fresh air shot as well.
That's right.
Oh,
but international football, any level or whatever, is all about preparation and being ready for your job. And it's at this point that I can safely say and begrudgingly say that I'm not forgetting to locally record this podcast from my side of things.
Well, hey, listen, don't feel too bad. I'm the one who had Robinson and Benny down as our two tens when Robinson was actually playing at nine. So we're all getting it a bit wrong today, so we are.
Yeah. Well, Robinson was playing at nine, but not getting, like, not touching the ball in the penalty box. You know, this is another contradiction. Like, he's our best goal scoring forward, but he does all his best work outside the box. Yeah.
He can't play nine anymore. He absolutely can't play nine anymore. He's either one of the two tens or he's not starting. It's one or the other.
Pascal Bergen asks, what can we do to improve our options going forward from midfield up? Defensively we seem fine, but attacking wise we are struggling.
Yeah,
you can wrap this into what you do with the forward line for the game against Scotland.
Absolutely, we had the conversation the last day that realistically they're only going to have one meaningful session, and where's the emphasis? The emphasis in this training session has got to be on combination play around the edge of the 18 yard box, from the front of the centre circle on. Cullen and Hendrick or whoever the two centre midfielders, I'd do away with the wing backs. I'd literally take your five players or any players who are likely to play in those five positions. I'd get my two centre midfielders, my two tens and my nine, and I would do half an hour of repetitive combination play, giving them some ideas as to what kind of combinations they can try, then giving them kind of free will and let them come up with their own little different combination bits and bobs. But at the moment it's absolutely not happening. It just doesn't exist, and we need to work on that over and over and over and try and make that happen.
So when you say do away with the wing backs, are you changing the system?
No, sorry. I'm just saying I'm not changing the system. No, I'm just saying we're crossing the ball. We're crossing the ball. We're two things we're doing is we're crossing the ball. We crossed the ball 15 times compared to the Ukraine 6. And the other thing we've been quite decent at is dribbling. We had 19 successful dribbles as against 7 for them. So, you know, the wide play, even though it's not exactly where we wanted to be, it's far less of an issue to me than our central build-up play. Mm-hmm. To me, it's the central build-up play. Take the group of players that are going to play in those five positions and just work with them as much as you possibly can.
But if we have,
are they? I'm sorry, just on the central build-up play, I'm still kind of baffled by this, because Kenny talked about it after the game, as David rightly brought up earlier on, that he regretted the number of long balls he played, and that, you know, our build-up play had to be a little bit, had to be better at times. But are they afraid of, like, if they give the ball away, they must be afraid, like, they've been cut open behind them so often. Are they not afraid, like, if they give the ball away, then the opposition will exploit all the space behind them? Because, you know, Ireland's back three can push up, but they're not exactly blessed with pace.
Yeah, but, I mean, what's the alternative? Keep doing what we're doing. I mean, it's just, we have to try and find a way to get the balance better, and just, you know, one of the two tens dropping while the other goes a little bit higher, you know, interchanging of positions. I think possibly even at times one of the two tens becomes one of the sixes, and one of the sixes goes a lot higher and makes it a kind of a run off the ball to try and lose their men. They're just, it's all too kind of prescriptive at the moment, in that everybody is kind of holding their positions, as that picture that Dan drew up showed. The two tens are so far away from the two sixes. They have to get so much closer to each other, so much closer to each other. Like, you could probably count on, you know, one hand the amount of times in a central area that we've had any player playing a pass on one touch. I know we're probably going to talk about, you know, the good stuff that's going on at 21's level at the moment. But if you look at the 21's goals the other night, now we got it, as I think we spoke about the last day, I think on the first goal we got a little bit of luck in that I don't think he's intended to put that first touch in behind the defender. He's probably looked to come to feet and go again. But there have been examples in some of those goal, in some of their play and some of those goals where, you know, one touch combination play in the final third where players are close to each other and they're able to go, you know, on coaching courses we're taught about, think of the sound of the ball, how, you know, the sound of the ball moving. And if for a proper combination play to happen, let's say it's 2-3 passes, the sound of that ball needs to be put, you know, bing, bing, bing.
Yeah.
Whereas with us, the ball is so far, the players are so far away from each other. How can it possibly be bing, bing, bing? It has to be more, do you know?
Yeah.
It's a much slower.
Slow clap.
Yeah, it's a much slower bing, bing, bing in terms of it.
There's certain people in the press box giving it that at the moment. I just briefly on what you're talking about, the massive gaps between the sorry, no, maybe I'm labouring this point too much. The massive gaps between the two sitting guys and the two forward guys. Is that where Matt Doherty's missed? Because Kenny often talks about Doherty coming in field and being a kind of a playmaker. And I'm thinking, well, if Doherty comes in field, he's actually a link man between Hendrick sitting and Ogbeni further forward, say.
Yeah, I think he does do that well. I think he does do that well. Obviously, that's kind of a pep thing that he kind of brought into to the Premier League, and other clubs have started to adopt it. And there's no doubt he started to do it under Spurs, do it at Spurs. And then, you know, I would say Stephen was watching Spurs games and saying, Jesus, this seems to be working quite well. And then it kind of, we started to see it with Ireland, and it was having a bit of success. And it is unfortunate in the timing that it's happened. I mean, in theory, Alan Brown, I know he only got whatever it was, 10 minutes out there. In theory, Alan Brown, being a centre midfielder, you would imagine that would be the kind of thing he could do quite comfortably. Again, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see who he does go with at right wing back against Scotland. I wouldn't rule out it being Alan Brown.
He is, though. Alan Brown is not as good a player as that's the thing.
There's a big difference between asking a natural right wing back to float into the middle and do little bits and pieces in the centre of midfield compared to asking a natural centre midfielder to play the majority of the game at right wing back and float into centre midfield and do a little few bits.
Yeah. David, Michael Dunn asks, does Obafemi start tomorrow? Robinson is completely off the pace. It makes no sense leaving an informed striker on the bench and starting one who isn't even starting for a mid-table championship team regardless of previous form for Ireland.
Yeah, no, I think it's... Yeah, I think he will. I think he will start. Obviously, he's come off the bench in the two games. And I wonder, like, I kind of wonder as well, even what Shane was saying there, maybe about the number of crosses and the wing-backs. But if you've got a player like Obafemi, who is a more natural striker, and I think his movement in the box would be better than someone like Robinson. I think he's actually faster than Robinson. He has that ability to maybe be able to have those bursts and make runs when he has come short and it hasn't come, and be able to spin in or whatever. I don't think Robinson maybe quite has that same. I think he could be a threat that way. I think he will, in terms of being a bit more of a focal point. I think he'd done pretty well when he came on, considering one of his first actions of the game in Armenia was to see a ball bounce off him that then led to Armenia scoring. I just think he's one of those that something like that won't affect him really. I know obviously it'd be a bit of a sickener for him, but I think him starting a game Which I think, yeah, I think he will. I think he done well when he came on during the night, put in one, was it one good cross, and I took a deflection with stuff he hit the bar with. But I think he could be one of those, it could be a player who maybe does off give Ireland a couple of different options in terms of, I don't quite think he'd be as good as Link in the play, maybe as say a Robinson, but I think he can do that. He can attempt to do it and then still have that ability to then spin and get into the box, and that could give the Scotland defence something a bit more to think about. So I think he could be a threat. And again, he's been playing regularly and he's been scoring goals. So you would imagine, even though there's been a bit of rest, you would like to think if he's starting a game, he'll naturally find some kind of rhythm to his own game pretty early rather than going searching for it, or if that makes sense, I don't know.
Yeah. Keith asks, the first 15-20 minutes of the Ukraine game had lots of high intensity pressing that then dramatically died off with the majority of players playing in the heat in Armenia. Wasn't that drop off intensity always going to happen? And if the game plan will be the same against Scotland, surely there has to be a big change in personnel. Shane, that's pretty much what we are expecting. Kenny has talked about there being changes to refresh the team. Any players that you really want to see brought in?
You'd definitely like to see Malumbi getting minutes. We'll try Parrott come back into the side. What other options? Remind me, who else have we got in kind of that 10 area who could come into a Gav?
Well, Will Keane is more of a, maybe he's more of a number 9, but Kenny has talked to him playing as kind of a 10 at times for Wigan. struggling beyond there.
I am thinking I'd like to see it freshened up, but have we got enough strength and depth that you know that we can freshen it up that much? Look, I think
is Parra capable of doing that?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. To me, I think he is potentially would come in for another start. All right. I mean, if they hadn't such an important game, you would have probably put forward an argument at the moment because of the form of Smallbone, that if the 21s had wrapped up already, you could have parachuted him in and get a couple of days training into him and potentially try and get him in onto the pitch. I don't know. Like, again, to be honest with you, Gavin, the two players that I would most like to see involved in terms of trying to solve the problem that we've just described, aren't in the squad for various reasons, and that's Jamie McGrath and Jack Byrne. To be honest, they're the ones I would love to see try to come in and see if they could.
If you were to switch it, could you have Hendrick further up? So rather than having Hendrick as one of the players, maybe dropping beside Cullen, if you had say a Malumbi in beside Cullen, who I think Cullen would bring a bit more calm and a bit more precision with his passing, providing he's passing to Jason Knight, because he apparently doesn't pass to anybody else in the one. But in terms of then having that Malumbi, you kind of have like your calm, sensible, and then you have your bit of a madman beside you who can get around the pitch and have that bit of a snarl, because Ireland have been too nice as well. Like Ireland need that. Remember one of the midfield performances that stands out over the last number of years that I've watched an Ireland player was Harry Arthur away to Austria when Ireland won 1-0, and actually very briefly went top of the World Cup group. And he was an absolute pain in the bollocks, I'd say, for the Austrians that day. He was everywhere. He was just little niggly fouls when they were needed. But it just sticks in my mind in terms of, and when he got it, he literally passed the ball 6-7 yards in front of him. That was all. He literally got it. And I think we still need that. We haven't got that presence in the midfield, and I think we'll need that against Scotland, and we genuinely would need that. So I would think, if you're kind of saying, well, where do you get that little bit of creativity? Because we've already spoken about Hendrick, and listen, I know people say Hendrick and some people be spitting on the floor just the mention of his name. He seems to have that reaction with lads, but he has been one of the few players who has been able to pick a pass and have a bit of creativity. And I wonder if maybe other demands aren't done on him defensively as much, that he would maybe last the course a bit more games. I don't know. He could be one of those who Kenny wants to rest now because he's played two games and he's played 90 minutes in both games. But if I was doing it, or if I was looking at it in terms of trying to bring a little added element of just a little bit of anger into it, literally a bit of anger into a team, because you kind of get the sense that sometimes with the Ireland team at the moment, they just kind of, not that they accept it, but they just kind of, I don't know, it's difficult to put my finger on it, but I just think as a base of it too, Cullen and Knight, Cullen and Malumbi could work really well, because Malumbi has become a bit more disciplined at West Brom. When speaking to people about him, like he is beginning to kind of rein in a small bit in terms of not going charging everywhere, but he still has that bit of devil in him, which I think you need in that midfield. And then if you have Hendrick a bit further up, and he's shown it before that he can receive it on the half turn, he can get turned, I think that could, that in, if we're talking about lasting the course a bit more in a game in an attacking sense, that could possibly work, especially when you look at, as we've Shane pointed out there, and it's grim when you look at it, like the dearth of options that are coming from the bench. So if you're kind of making that tweak from lads who are already within the team, that would be one that I would look at and would think, you know what, it's worth having a go at. Even naturally, possibly because he's left footed. I know in terms of set pieces as well, because that's one thing we're talking about. We mentioned that about set pieces earlier, and Cullen's been giving them, but like, I also don't think they've been good enough. It's almost, I don't know, from being in this, when you're, well, you would have been in Armenia, Gab, so I don't know, I know he had that one ball in for Ogbeni, but what I noticed the other night was he just kind of seems, he put the ball into good areas sometimes, but there's not much venom on them. He's just getting them in.
There's no pace on the ball. It's a kind of a, the trajectory is a little bit too high, rather than, you know, that really lovely arrowed ball through the air that maybe Harren can hit. I'm not sure. Maybe we don't have the quality to hit those balls.
No, but I think that could be an issue. That could be, again, it's a, part of the reason maybe why in the last while we haven't posed much of a threat is that Cullen, yeah, there just hasn't seemed to be that zip on it. Do you know what I mean? And I think Howerhan is capable of that. And then also in a any midfield, I suppose you're going to need that element of balance, aren't you? I suppose. And I think he would provide that. But Pearson, yeah. He will, and I think he'll play. I think he'll come in for Stevens, because Stevens has flagged a little bit, and he's not, I think the last little while injuries have maybe taken his toll a little bit on him. But like, so McLean. But then, so I think that'd be something, if you're looking at it, would be just take Cullen off the set pieces for but maybe ones that could be a bit closer to the goal, where maybe all you do need is a bit more precision rather than pace. But he was doing everything. Like, he was taking corners and all sorts of it.
And from both sides, like, so that just again, which shows that like Ireland just lacked that bit of variety. Come here, I know we're tied for time, and I do briefly want to mention the 21s, because the draw between Italy and Sweden is glory result for Ireland. They're now guaranteed a playoff, and David, they'll go to Ascoli in Italy next week with a chance to top the group if they beat Italy and qualify automatically for the European Championships at under 21 level for the first time ever.
Yeah, great achievement in terms of, well, great achievement so far, from the point of view of where they were in the group and putting that run together when it really mattered, like beating Sweden home and away, not conceding a goal, then basically overpowering Bosnia, I would say. Like there was a couple of sticky moments in that game, and then they came through it and then got a goal through Odobeku at that a critical point, which again is good for the team like that, you know what I mean? Like, it's not as if it was all nicey-nicey. Like, Bosnia were putting Ireland under a bit of pressure. They had a couple of chances and they kind of stood up to it, even though obviously Brian Maher had to make one really good save as well. Which is, listen, that's allowed. The goalkeeper's allowed to keep the ball out of the net. But like, they kind of, and then I'll be honest, I only saw the highlights of the Montenegro game, so I didn't get a full sense of that. But again, just following it up, do you know what I mean? Not having a couple of good results and then having a dip. They seem to be now at a level where they have that bit of momentum and just are in a really good place. And like Crawford himself said, like, they're not, it's great that they have the playoff guaranteed. But like Italy'll be worried now, I'd say. Italy'll be considering, like, they, not that they're limping over it, but it's not as if they're blitzing teams either, and they were fortunate-ish to get the result in Tallaght against Ireland as well. And like, listen, it'd be amazing if they were to go there and win, and I think they're well capable of it, really are.
Well, I'm in Poland, so that precludes me from making the trip to Ascoli, which Italy seemed to deliberately play these games in very difficult to reach locations. I've been talking to a couple of journalists, it sounds like it's going to be fairly tricky to find your way to Ascoli.
I know. Yeah, no, I was looking at it after the, say for me, after the Bosnia game, just seeing would it be feasible even beforehand, but it's, yeah, it's a bit of a trek to get there. And as a poor freelancer, whoever the bottom line counts Yeah, it's a bit too difficult to get there, unfortunately.
Gav, get on to the boys in the 42 there. Ask them, do they want me to get on to Filippo and Giuseppe to give us live update?
Oh, Jesus, yeah.
Are they from around there?
I don't know. I'm not sure what part.
No, it's just Italy.
Are you still in touch with the lads? How are you getting on?
Giuseppe was over there recently, actually, for the next part of his A license. He's doing his A license with the FAI.
Oh, is he?
He started it while he was at Dundalk, so he has to do the whole thing through now, yeah?
Yeah. Any word from Filippo lately?
No word from Filippo. I had somebody inquiring the other day looking for Filippo's number, all right, an agent, so I don't know what that was about.
I mean, potential League of Ireland job?
No, I wouldn't think so. I'd say he was trying to push one. I don't know what he was at. To be honest with you.
I think he's back in America, isn't he? He's back doing the coaching in New York, isn't he?
He had that thing in New York, yeah.
Right, okay, we're pretty much out of time. We will finish with predictions for the Republic of Ireland and Scotland. Let's ask it a little bit differently. Will Ireland score a goal in this game and add 33% to their total? No, add another 50% on to their existing total of Nations League goals.
I heard, can you remember, I'm putting you on the spot a little bit now, I heard the names of the two players. One of those two goals was scored by somebody mad, wasn't it? Do you have the name?
Sean Williams in Cardiff. Oh, okay. Yeah, Sean Williams and Shane Duffy. They're our two UEFA Nations League goal scorers.
I don't think I'm going to try and predict the score. I think I'm going to try and predict the XG, if that's a...
will we score, Shane?
Yes, we will. And it will be Shane Duffy.
David, will we score?
I hope so. Just purely because I'd like to see some positive YouTube comments.
will we win, Shane?
No, we'll draw though.
Will we win, David?
Yeah.
We will. He says.
We will win 1-0.
Okay.
It'll be a precision cross by Josh Cullen with his leg hanging off in the 89th minute. I think we'll lose. To be honest, I think Scotland have a very solid but decent side and have a bit more about them than us. And especially with everything that's happened over the last little while, the week and the change that are going to be made, I think I can see Ireland being a bit disjointed again, and I can see Scotland being capable of taking advantage of it.
Yeah, my opinion, for what it's worth, is aligned with yours, David. I'm expecting another defeat. But we'll be back on Monday to rake through it all and look ahead to the game against Ukraine in Poland on Tuesday. Shane, David, thanks very much. Thanks to you for listening. Get in touch. All the various channels are listed in the episode description.
Can you get in touch with what concerts you're going to this summer? I want to know. Festivals, summertime, you know?
Thanks, everybody. Take it easy. Bye-bye. Wasn't easy, but nothing is. No. Down when I was young.